Listen when you want, how you want. This is Tone FM.
Listen again.
Online, on the app, and on your smart speaker, and across the county town on 107.8. It's Giles Cosgrove here for Tone FM, and joining me is founding member of Cooler Shaker, Alonza. Alonza, thank you ever so much for your time. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Nice to be on your show, Giles. Thank you very much.
It's a fantastic opportunity to be able to talk to you. Cooler Shaker, one of the coolest bands of the 90s, back now with a brand new album, Natural Magic. It's a very quick follow-up to the album that returned you guys to music back in 2022. You were premiering a lot of the material on this album on the tour that was supporting the previous one. You guys must be rapid with the songwriting. How did this album come about?
We're exhausted. We're absolutely exhausted. We've been making albums since we've got back together. We split in 1999 under, you know, the pressure of the business and you know, general narcissistic sociopaths that tend to dwell in that business. We got out of it for a while. And we've been putting out records. We put about 3 records out, but we're really lazy. So we'll put a record out, we'll tour a little bit, and then take 5 years off or something. It's true, yeah, we had that album out in May 2022, which was the first congregational church of love and true and hugs and all of that. Very long title, I can barely pronounce. And then, I don't know, something happened in all of us. We just decided to really make a go. Jay coming back into the fold, I think, really helped things. And we've always been good friends, and the band's always been a big part of our lives. But we've had families, we've all done other things. So I think at this, we're all at a point in our lives where we thought, let's do this a little bit more. This is fun. So yeah, as soon as we were still touring the last album, the First Congregational Church. And we were, yeah, writing for this album, Natural Magic, that's due out very shortly.
And as you mentioned, it's your first album with Jay back in the fold since 1998. How did that come about?
Well, I mean, it was a funny set of circumstances. Our old keyboard player Henry or Harry, who's a great talented musician, was just our schedule was just getting a little bit hectic, and he had a young family, and this happened around the same time as Jay was free. We'd asked Jay, you know, back in, I think, when was it, 2004, 2005, if he wanted to join us, but he was playing with this other little band, trying to forget. Oasis or something. I don't know if you heard of them. So he was rather well paid and rather, you know, occupied as well. So he did 9 years with them. And he's free. So it was just circumstance again. It was that brought it together. The fates brought us together once again.
Well, the fates have done a cracking good job, because the album is absolutely monumental. It's vintage Cooler Shaker. Where did the title Natural Magic come from?
Well, it was that song Natural Magic. I don't know. It could be. It could sound like some, you know, organic deodorant or something, couldn't it? I don't know. It's it was just natural. Yeah, where did it come from? I think Crispin coined it. I'm not sure where on earth it did come from. It was the title of that song, and that seemed to sum up the mood of the album. And it's very Cooler Shaker. We like a little bit of magic and esoteric mystery and all that. We like to keep things natural as well. No click tracks or too processing. You know, it's all natural in that sense.
Natural.
say, because it's been a while since you guys were first in the studio recording K, the music industry has changed, but technology has dramatically changed in the intervening years. What's it like recording a Cooler Shaker album in 2023, 2024?
It's the same process. I mean, we try and cut stuff as live as possible, certainly the basis of the track, except, yeah, we can't afford to go to tape anymore. It's bloody expensive, so we record digitally. We'll run some stuff off tape if we feel it needs it. But the process essentially is the same. All they've done is same with photography. They've taken all those old recording techniques and sort of put that into the digital domain. So essentially, you do have the tools that would have fitted into, you know, would have taken an old studio in a massive room to fit all those tools, and you can now fit them into a little hard drive, obviously. So for us, it hasn't changed. Obviously, yeah, the technology's changed, and I think you can probably hear that in, you know, the charts and what young people are putting out in terms of music. Technology's always affected music. I think it's great. You heard in the 90s with the trip hop and the jungle scene. That was a direct result of that Akai sampler. It was a cheap, affordable sampler that was out there, and that basically created that. You know, you play your breakbeat down the octave, and you've got your trip hop. You play it up the octave, and you had your drum and bass. So it was technologies, I think, has always dictated music. We're just ignoring it at the moment, pretending we're still back in the good old rock and roll days.
I was going to say, you guys are really keeping it vintage, keeping it proper Cooler Shaker. The organs are all going on. The guitars are blaring out. The bass line on the title track is storming. It sounds absolutely
fantastic. Thank you very much. You know, it's just, it's all real performance. I think, sorry to go on, but the majority of commercial records now, there will not be one organic performed instrument, including the voice, on the entire record. So that's what we can offer these days. It's that, that's what we do well. So we should, you know.
Gaslighting. It opens up with what I feel like might be a nod to The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
Absolutely, yeah. Love, Guilt, Got Heron, yeah.
I feel like throughout both that track specifically and then across the album, obviously there's a track on the record, I Don't Want to Pay My Taxes, I Don't Want to Fund World War III, which all of a sudden in the last couple of weeks has become hugely relevant given the conversations in the media circus.
Yes, absolutely.
What do you
in
guys want to say with this album?
Well, that's it. We've always stayed away from any partisan issue and any divisive issue and politics and any, you know, any social issue these days becomes very divisive. But we figured if you stand on that hill and say, we are against war, war is bad, that's a hill you can die on, we figured. That's, you know, I hope I still live in a world where you're not divisive by saying, you know, the industrial scale killing of humanity is a bad thing. I hope I'm not in a world like that. So it's, yes, something we've always been against. We had, you know, even going back to the noughties, we had Dictator of the Free World during the those post 9/11 wars, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan and everything. It's just been going on for so long, and it's so pointless, and it's so obvious who profits from these things as well. So it's clear that 99% of the world don't want these wars, and there's a 1% that profits. That's why we have them.
Unfortunately so, but music as a form of expression always has been, and you're keeping up that great tradition.
Absolutely. Rock and roll is. Somebody asked me that yesterday, you know, have you got a duty to sort of say, and I don't think it's absolutely not a duty, but rock and roll is anti-establishment, having said that, you know. I think you should have the right to express your opinion in your art, and if people don't like it, they won't, you know, they won't consume it, they won't listen to it, or they won't buy it or whatever. Rock and roll has been anti-establishment. It's always been sticking it to the man, and that's going back to the 50s, you know. This is it's got a long history of anti-establishment kind of rhetoric. So, if anything, we're keeping up that tradition.
Brothers and sisters, we are gathered here together to witness the great congregation in this Aquarian age of communication and rehumanization.
Brother Bevan.
Can't have the times of gentlemen. I promise we will tear this down. We will rise like the smoke from those burning cities. And know that the judgment will come.
And then we all stand up before the sail door shut.
Shaker have always been at the forefront of that. You guys generated controversy from day one. Some of the music press were a bit snooty about you guys, which just completely seems beyond the pale to me. But then again, it was before my time. I was born the year you guys split up, I won't lie. But having grown listening to your music, it's just wonderful. And I do look forward to the opportunity to one day see you guys live. I know your tour in support of the Church album went down so well, but touring these days must be somewhat different to what it used to be.
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of for a band like us, it's almost more important now than it used to be. I mean, that's really where we get to connect to the fans and stuff like that. I think the emphasis certainly back in the 90s was just about selling records, but now it's really about live shows. You know, it's for me, that's what we can offer, that experience of live music, that danger that you have in live music. It's it's just raw, and I think it's just something that you can't reproduce. AI can't reproduce that. Being in a club with a hot, sweaty club with a loud rock and roll playing, and you're amongst like-minded people. I don't know. It's a really great experience. That's I love it. It's it's a collective experience. It's not.
And has connecting with that audience been made easier or more difficult with the advance of technology and especially mobile phones at gigs? You can't go to a gig these days without watching it through someone's screen and what have you. Where do you come down on when it comes to gigs and mobile phones?
You know, I mean, people need to come and see you play and they want to film it. You know, I can't take a gripe with that. Yeah, I mean, it's sad, you know. I'm an old man, and I like the days when they held up blighters at concerts, you know, on the slow numbers. But then, you know, that's when you could also smoke in venues, you know. It was another age, another era. You know, I think it's always great to experience real life, and if you're experiencing something through a screen, you're putting something in the way. I mean.
And in talking of appearing live, you're going up and down the UK to various record shops doing acoustic performances and record signings for this new album. Where are you most looking forward to going to?
Oh, goodness. Oh, don't ask that, because then I'll get in trouble with every other place. I mean, we love the West Country, so we'll be going to Bristol. I've got friends in Bristol. In fact, my best friend, my oldest friend, lives in Bristol. So that'll be great. We love the West Country. I'll say that, and sorry to everyone else.
Talking of the West Country and performing live, with this new album, is there a chance that you could be appearing at Worthy Farm in the summer?
I don't know. No, I mean, I haven't spoken to anything yet. We absolutely would love to. Glastonbury, we started off playing in a little army tent in Glastonbury. We stole the electricity off the Krishna stage, and we had a little sort of backline set up there. And then eventually after, we got to play on the main stage as well. We were, Glastonbury was really, a spiritual home for us, for the band. We used to rehearse there. We played at the assembly rooms in Glastonbury and played various other little events there. We'd love to get back there, absolutely. No offers on the table at the moment, but hey, who knows, if there's a little cancellation or something, we'll be definitely.
I mean, I'd be the first person to put my hand up and say I'd love to see you guys there.
It's great. It makes sense at a venue like that, a festival like that. Absolutely, you want to hear loud psychedelic rock and roll, don't you?
The album is being toured around these various record shops. This real emergence of vinyl does tap into that vintage essence of Cooler Shaker, because even in the 90s, your sound was throwing back to Hendrix and Carnaby Street and that sort of thing. When you first got together, was that a conscious effort to harken back to the classic days of rock and roll? How did the sound of Cooler Shaker evolve?
Well, we were all teenagers, I guess, in the 80s. And you're kind of getting into music, and I don't know. I mean, at the time, 80s music, it just didn't, that the style of production and the general mood, I didn't relate to it. And then I listened to the Who as the first band that I listened to. I thought, wow, that's really exciting. What energy? It really burst out of the speakers. And then obviously the Beatles was an institution. We were singing Beatles songs in the school assembly back when you had assemblies. So I think we just grew up with it. It was in the 80s, not relating to the music of the 80s, and then just digging into that treasure chest of 60s music. The songwriting was great. And it was just that whole period. It was such a positive time in the world. I think everyone was really amongst people. I think there was lots of horrible things going on, but in the West there was a really positive, forward-looking attitude, I think that was definitely reflected in the music. And plus they were pushing boundaries, if you think, that just that movement from Please Please Me at the beginning to the 60s. Come on, come on. What we were listening to by the end of the 60s.
When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. Will I stop and I turn and I go for a ride? Till I get to the bottom and I see you again. Yeah.
And the evolution of music was extraordinary in such a short period. If you think how music's evolved even over the last 20 years, it hasn't done half of what happened in the 1960s in terms of evolution. And we just fell in love with that. I mean, there was amongst the indie scene in the 80s and early 90s, you could hear other bands were obviously referencing 60s music. If you listen to the first Stone Roses album, it's got really, very much that sort of 60s feel to it, and psychedelic sort of references, and even the the Primal Scream and that sort of dance stuff, the baggy stuff, referencing those sort of sounds, it was just the world we grew up to. It was just our record collection, essentially.
Talking of your record collection, can you remember what the first album you bought was?
Well, I'm trying to think. I think it was first album I bought was probably, Tommy by The Who, I think. I think whether I'd seen it on the, been on TV or something, I'd got into it. My girlfriend at the time was a modette, so I was getting into The Who. That's how I got into them. And so I think maybe that was it. It was a great,
It's a classic album. And what's your favourite cover to play live?
Oh, goodness. We always play Hush. Favourite cover? I'm trying to think. We've been doing Give Me Some Truth. We've been playing recently on the last couple of tours by John Lennon. And that's been a great song. And it's been a great song, particularly at the moment when that's the last thing that you're being given. It's truth, certainly from the powers that be, certainly from the media. It felt like a really poignant cover to be playing in these times.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites.
you mentioned Hush there. I would argue, and I've gone on record as saying this before on the show constantly, it's one of the very few cases where the cover is better than the original. Like, just, it is utterly sublime. How did that come about? Because it's genuinely one of the best tracks of the 90s I can think of.
It was, again, I think it comes from the live scene. I mean, there was a really great live scene in the 90s, especially, you know, even in London. I mean, there was, most pubs would have a back room where you'd have regular shows. So that gave us the opportunity to just to play in these little pubs and clubs pretty regularly. So that song, it was something that we kind of threw in because we were playing original stuff. You'd throw in something that people knew and it always went down well and it sort of stayed with us. And then I don't know, somebody suggested, why didn't you put it out? And we did. It's this history. Yeah, it's one of our most successful tracks, which is funny.
I mean, the first time I heard Cooler Shaker was on a compilation CD aimed at dads that we bought my dad for Father's Day. And Hey Dude was on there. And we'd go on road trips and me and my sister would say, can you play that one again? And we would just have that on repeat for a good half an hour because it was just fantastic. And the music video for that is you guys playing it on the top of a bus in London. What was it like recording that?
Oh, I mean, it was great. It was just very surreal. I mean, you're kind of swinging around on a top of, I mean, I think I was at one point, you're on an actual crane and being suspended on this bus while the camera's spinning around you, driving through central London. Yeah, and people are looking up and thinking, what the hell is going on? It was, it was weird. It was, I've never been on one of those open top buses before, you know, do the tour. I grew up in London, so you know, I never did the tourist thing. It was, I finally got on one. It was good. It was a very surreal, but it was a great moment. We had this crazy French director, Stéphane Sednouy, who was making this video. It was going to be crazy and sexy and loads of energy. And it was you know, one of those first big videos we did. So it was a real kind of baptism into that world. It was great. I think he was dating Kylie Minogue at the time. She turned up to the video shoot at the end. You know, for us, it was a great day, really fun packed day.
No. feel like a man.
That everything had changed. Like, how did you go from, like you were talking about earlier, the back rooms in pubs to standing on top of a bus with Kylie Minogue's boyfriend filming you for your big single?
Yeah, no, I know. It was very strange. I mean, and it did happen very quickly. We were playing clubs. We got very lucky. We got to tour with our friends Reef.
Oh, bless your hands on my
They got signed by Sony and they offered us a support tour, which then really helped us along at the time. I'm trying to think. At some point, we were on a little pub tour and we got a slot on... Mark Radcliffe had a show back in the 90s called The White Room.
Nice to see you once again, music lovers. Welcome to another night of white. Next up, a band...
There was a few music shows that would go out on the terrestrial channels, and there were only four of them back then, I think, maybe five. So you were reaching half the country. So we did this show and we were halfway through a pub tour that was, you know, was doing okay. There were people coming along, but we weren't a well-known band. And then suddenly these shows were absolutely packed out. You know, and then obviously we were on Columbia Records, which is a part of Sony, and they pushed their massive, you know, promotion button. And there you go. Yeah, it happened really fast. It was quite scary actually to see, to be a part of it. Very surreal time. Yeah, absolutely.
Could you feel the pressure when you were in the studio recording the debut, or did that come later? You were recording the debut and the album went with as the audience grew. Like, how was that being in the studio for the first time with the debut album?
It was, I mean, we had been in studios before. We had a chance to work with George Martin's son, Giles Martin, who now looks after all the Beatles catalogue. And he was starting out as a producer back then. We got a chance to work with him. So we'd been into Lyndhurst, that massive studio in London. So we'd had experience of big studios and stuff. We were on the road, and we were literally coming off the road and straight into the studio, maybe for 3 days, maybe for a week. And then, you know, finishing off what we'd done last time, maybe getting down a couple of new tracks. And it was really done. We didn't have time to sort of think. There was literally no time off at that time. We were young and we had loads of energy, and it was, yeah, it just literally didn't have a day off at that time. And funnily enough, this last album's been a bit like that. We were, you know, we came off stage at Shepherd's Bush, drove down to Brighton, started recording the next day. We had a little break for Christmas, and then we were, yeah, touring, and then back into the studio, off on another tour. And but this album we've just made was made in a very similar way to K, in as much as touring and recording at the same time. We've always had the luxury of just spending a few months, you know, even 6 months, you know, just recording an album before.
Do you find that Kula Shaker work best when there is that frenetic pace to life? Because this album does really much remind me of that classic Kula Shaker sound from K. And it's interesting that it's felt almost similar in the way that you guys went about recording it. Is there perhaps that routine of gigging and recording and gigging and recording and just keep going, that pace of life? Do you think that adds something to the Kula Shaker sound?
Yeah, no, I think it's certainly Crispian is someone that definitely responds to pressure. I think he enjoys working under a bit of pressure. I'm not like that. But then, you know, I just want an easy life. That's my problem. See. No, absolutely. The pressure is good, and it's absolutely deadlines. All those things are great. It gives it some urgency, a sense of urgency when you're working.
As you were mentioning, you were touring a lot. Is there going to be a full venue tour for this album?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're just putting it together at the moment. I don't know what's been announced, but we should be coming. Absolutely, we will be playing. Certainly, I think in Bristol and possibly I think in Cardiff as well, which is nearby if you're West Country. We'll be playing there in April, I think. I think the dates will be announced on our website. You know, you can absolutely go there, go to our website if you want to check in dates and stuff.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see that. That's going to be brilliant. So I'm very much...
No, that's absolutely where it happens for us, is live. That's where it all makes sense. And it really is. I love playing live just because I'm a part of part of something. It's not, you know, the music's half of it, but just, yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, great experience. Just, you know, commune
was,
of like
was that what attracted people. You to pick up the bass guitar then, to be able to play live? Was that what you thought, I'm gonna give that a go?
I think yes, absolutely. Personality definitely affects the instrument you. I mean, I learned piano. I was played piano as a kid, you know. And I think when I was at school, my mate had a guitar, and it's like, well, how do we play together? Well, you've got a guitar, I'll play bass. And my dad's friend who lived opposite us, he was a session bass player and lent me a bass. Very kind of him. Showed me the C major scale, and away you go. No, I like the bass. It's an integral instrument. It's an instrument you notice if it stops, but it's integral. I love it, and I like that position in the band. You're not at the front, but you are gluing things together, and just, you know, you're joining the rhythm to the harmony. And for me, that's my place in the band, definitely.
And who are your favorite bass players for music over the years? Who are you drawing your influences for? Who are you thinking, oh, that's a good riff? Like, where do you find the most inspiration from bassists?
Well, I mean, from I listened to The Who was my first favorite band. I was like, wow, this band's amazing. And half of that was because of John Entwistle, who was just, he's just an incredible, incredible bass player. Just does stuff that you can't even imagine sometimes. And then obviously Paul McCartney, which is, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people do cite him as a favorite bass player. He's not often thought of as one, but he's a great, great melodic bass player. And then the king, the godfather of bass, really is James Jamerson for me. He's I love his style. You know, he invented modern bass playing, as far as I'm concerned. Certainly, that's the line I follow. You know, they have in India, they have these things, sampradayas, and they'll follow your guru or send his guru, and these lines, and they'll eventually go back to the demigods. You know, and my sampradaya is definitely the James Jamerson sampradaya.
Indian culture has been a big influence on Kula Shaker. I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but how did yourself and Crispin and the band come across? Yes, thank you. How did yourself and Crispin and the band get into all of that, and how has it influenced your music?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, no, we've always been interested in that culture, and it's always been, with being British, certainly Indian culture has always been a part of British culture, as much as we've, you know, colonized them and stole all their cash and stuff. We've absorbed a lot of their culture as well, you know. Just something magical about the place that attracted us, I think. And we got out there, you know, when we were in our early 20s, and just fell in love with the place. If you've ever been there, I haven't been there for years, actually. I haven't been for about almost 20 years. India's the one place on the planet that I've been where real magic still exists. So
if someone had the opportunity to fly out to India, if they had a ticket and a little bit of a budget, where would you say to go? Where would you tell them, you've got to go here? Where would you, an itinerary of traveling around India, where would you say to go?
Oh, there's a new road I think they built from Delhi. You can, if you land in Delhi, hop in a taxi, drive up to Lakshman Jula, and it's in the foothills of the Himalayas. It's a few hours out of Delhi, and you'll be, the Ganges will be flowing down through the mountains, and you know, that really is a magical place. You'll get some calm, and it's close to Delhi. It's that immediate place you can get out of the chaos into some calm. You can go off into the mountains, you can discover the valleys, you can old hill stations, and hang with the yogis.
I'll put that on my bucket list. That sounds brilliant. Alonzo, it's been a great time chatting to you. The new Kula Shaker album, Natural Magic, is out on the 2nd of February. You can catch it on all good streaming platforms. You can get it on vinyl as well. They'll be available and touring around the UK in various record shops. And then, as you've just heard there, you can catch Kula Shaker live later in the year around the UK. Alonzo, thank you ever so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Giles. Lovely to speak to you.
Listen when you want, how you want. This was a Tone FM Listen Again.
All rights reserved, 2023.